I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It's the top of the week, which means it's time to explore some strange news. The White House apparently is beefing a little bit with the Sun. There are possibly Olympics that do not have the same rules and regulations as the current Olympics. Most importantly, the WHO has released some new information about a substance they consider carcinogenic.
Oh, yes. But first, we're going back to June 13th, 2011, to tell you about a little video we made called Stuff They Don't Want You to Know - Aspartame. It was posted on the How Stuff Works YouTube channel, and before that, it was on iTunes Video. And Ben, I just posted the description there. Do you want to give us a read of the description of that video?
Oh, gosh. We're traveling back in time. Aspartame is sweeter than sugar and packs less of a caloric punch. Sounds cool, right? So why has aspartame become one of the most controversial food additives in history? Tune in to learn more about aspartame conspiracy theories.
Oh, thank you so much for that, Ben. Then, guys, on July 4th, 2014, we reposted that video on our shiny new YouTube channel. I think we put the same description in there. And we also added a little something to the beginning of it. And I just want to tell you about that. This is a statement from Morando Sofriti, the scientific director of the Ramazzi Center. He made this statement in 2011 at a little thing called the ALDE Seminar on Artificial Sweeteners in Brussels. Here's the quote.
Aspartame should be considered a multiple site trans species carcinogenic agent in rodents. A reevaluation of the current regulation of aspartame remains, in our opinion, urgent.
Okay. So that's 2011, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Statements being made with a bunch of scientific experts around, and one of them going, we need to classify this substance, aspartame, as a carcinogenic substance in rats, right?
Sure.
Just in rats.
But also, weren't they like just feeding them hella amounts of the stuff, like for long periods of time?
Yes, but there's more to it than that.
I know. But that was always the thing that I think some people left out when they were saying, sweet and low give you cancer. And we sort of, you know, forget that we're feeding these tiny creatures, you know, insane doses of the stuff.
Well, we are. Well, let's get into that really quickly. According to the FDA's website, you would need to ingest 75 packets of the branded aspartame NutraSweet or Sweet and Low or all those other ones before it's going to become even the level that you're allowed to have during any 24-hour period, right? So 75 packets seems like a whole bunch. I've never had that much. Mm-hmm. But again, this is why this whole topic is weird. This is why it's being spoken about so much right now. This is why we're even covering it again, because there's weirdness to this whole aspartame business. Now let's pause on the old coverage and let's go to the new story. This was posted on July 1st, 2023, the hottest day on record as of this recording ever, literally ever.
Yes.
The title is "The WHO is about to declare aspartame can cause cancer. Here's why you should listen." And this is written by Karen Landman for Vox. I'm just going to read directly from this a little bit. I highly recommend you check out the article. In mid-July, the International Agency for Research on Cancer, a branch of the World Health Organization, plans to release the results of a fresh review of safety data on aspartame. According to Reuters, the agency will declare that aspartame is, quote, possibly carcinogenic to humans.
Hmm.
So this is all reporting on some reporting that's mm-hmm. going to have or some announcements, right? Mm-hmm. So as we're sitting here and, you know, discussing this in early July, we're recording on Wednesday, July 5th. Right now, it's just, I guess, letting us know it's coming. But it is really interesting that we're all being warned that it's coming, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Matt, does this pertain, the possibly portion of this, to these classifications that carcinogens are kind of given? I believe there's a 1, 2A, 2B, and 3, with 1 being definitely, 2A being probably, 2B being possibly, and 3 being not.
Yeah, I mean, this is what it has to do with, right? It's being declared a possible carcinogenic substance. And that is because this product, I guess, well, food additive, this thing, this mm-hmm. substance, has been debated since its inception as a thing. And the science is kind of still out on it for a whole bunch of reasons. And if you continue through this article, it gives you the history of aspartame, or NutraSweet, as it was originally called by G.D. Searle and company when it was invented. But when I went back and watched our video again, guys, I pulled out a couple of things that I think we just have to talk about. Because
oh, man. Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
Which, by the way, we talked about before in 2014, when we released our audio episode, "What Are You Actually Eating?" Mm-hmm. And then we put that out as a classic in 2021. We just want you guys to hear the aspartame stories so badly. But let's go over it right now. So as you say in your awesome voiceover, Ben, in that 2011 original video, aspartame, or NutraSweet, is discovered by a chemist working for this company called G.D. Searle and Company. This chemist is originally, this group of people, you know, led by this one chemist, they're attempting to make some kind of anti-ulcer drug. But I don't know who accidentally tasted the thing, but somebody got a little in their mouth at some point and they went, "Wow, that's sweet as hell, guys. I wonder if we could put that in stuff."
I tried to find that person too when I was researching and writing that. Like I tried to find that person, and it's super close to the chest even now. Like the person who had that, like, we know the invention of the microwave comes from the guy who had chocolate in his pocket around microwave energy. Mm-hmm. But we don't know, we being current society, we do not know who got the lab leak in their mouth and said, "I'm not dead. And this is pretty tasty."
Not dead yet.
But it happened, right?
Let's sell this to the public. Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, it definitely happened.
And this company, G.D. Searle and Company, it's a pharmaceutical company. They create drugs, right? New drugs. And when they decided, hey, we could try this thing out, they tried to get FDA approval. And in 1974, they did get approval for NutraSweet as, and this is very important, as a food additive in dry goods. Okay. And it started going out into products. But a lot of consumers were complaining about the stuff. Maybe some of them were complaining out of fear and misattribution of ingesting the substance and getting things like headaches, or someone becoming blind at some point when they began eating aspartame. Maybe they're misattributing the cancer that somebody got after they started ingesting aspartame. Or maybe not, because a ton of people were saying these kinds of things publicly. Or again, it was called NutraSweet at the time. It was a branded thing.
But I mean, as we talk about a lot in our AstroTurf episode of recent time, it's really tough to draw a straight line from a thing to a condition and with certainty. So no matter how many of these reports you get, it's obviously been in debate because the stuff's been on the market and is still very much on the market and incredibly popular. And there is certainly no cut and dry answer as to whether, yes, this stuff definitely is giving lots of people cancer.
Yes. And a reminder that those reports have been coming since the late 70s, early 1980s. So then, you guys, approval of the substance gets paused for a little bit for more studies. And this is in the early 1980s, because there were doubts about consumer safety, right? And specifically doubts about the studies put forth by G.D. Searle and Company. Because, again, like, so what happens in this whole capitalist society sometimes, depending on the amount of regulation and the type of regulation, some companies can test their own thing and be like, guys, look, hey, look at all these numbers. It's good to go.
Or pay some sort of fund some sort of post-grad experiment regimen, which tends to indicate the preconceived or hoped for conclusions of the place. Man, that video slaps, you know? I wish we had more time with it. Yeah.
It reminds me a lot, too, of the kinds of studies that went into, quote-unquote, proving that OxyContin was not addictive. You know what I mean? And then it was only kind of found out that those studies were loaded or were being twisted and the data was being manipulated. So there is cause for suspicion, not fully saying that's always what's happening. But anytime that a company is putting out its own research into their product, probably good to get a third party confirmation.
And yeah. WHO is not the FDA.
Also true. But let me give you the short part first, and then I'll give you the explanation. After it was paused, couple years later, it's fully approved as a dry good food additive. And then couple of years after that, it gets approved, and this is really important, as a liquid additive.
Oh, baby.
For drinks. All the soft drinks. Because remember, as we were recording this, it's not NutraSweet anymore. It's aspartame. Aspartame is in, I think, a little over 6,000 available products right now that you can consume.
Matt, was it an escalation when it was made available as its own individualized packets that you can sweeten whatever you want with? Or is that a different conversation? Is that considered a dry good if it's just the thing in a packet?
Ooh, I don't know. It was sold separately. I don't know. I honestly don't have that information in front of me. But I imagine selling it as a food additive, as its own thing, is like pretty much the same as it being allowed to be added. But I don't know.
It came in terms of order of operations or deployment. It came as a packet before it became an ingredient in liquid. So that's why, like, now we have created brand familiarity, right? Mm. Now, Coca-Cola, Diet Coca-Cola, or whatever, with aspartame is a cameo, right? From one of your earlier friends. Now it's not just a crazy chemical.
It's a collab.
Now
it's a feature.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Now it's a collaboration.
So exactly. Speaking of collaboration, I'm going to give you the conspiracy at the heart of the original video. I'm going to try and I think this is how it goes. The theory is that the FDA, the CDC, and several other government agencies have been aware of aspartame's dangers for decades, but because of the needs of a private company, you know, profits and stuff, and the revolving doors of business and politics, this potentially cancer-causing substance has been greenlit by all the parties everywhere in perpetuity. That's the theory, right? If there's some kind of collusion. Here's why people think there's some collusion. Do you guys remember a dude named Donald Rumsfeld, once Secretary of Defense?
Donald Rums, yeah, of course.
Yeah. He's somewhat famous in these parts.
Well, guys, according to defense.gov's bio on Rumsfeld, quote, from 1977 to 1985, Rumsfeld served as CEO, president, and then chairman of G.D. Searle & Company, a worldwide pharmaceutical company. The successful turnaround there earned him awards as outstanding chief executive officer in the pharmaceutical industry from Wall Street Transcript. That was in 1980. Also from Financial World in 1981. Here's from the Harvard Business School website. Quote, the real success of Searle, G.D. Searle & Company, the ones that invented NutraSweet, under Rumsfeld, came with the FDA approval of aspartame, the artificial sweetener that became popular and very profitable for Searle during the 1980s diet craze. Okay, so that seems a little weird. Mm-hmm. How did the Secretary of Defense help make aspartame a thing? Like, it goes back to, I don't know, what are some of the other, there's some other weird coincidences with, like, George Bush Sr. and running, you know, as vice president and for some reason having all of the FBI report directly to him. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or why does the Secret Service work for the Treasury and not the executive? I mean, they're like, and that's not even entering a private entity conversation, you know?
Yes.
Matt, you did something fantastic here because we know it might sound crazy, but as Matt is saying, years ago, we pointed out that this stuff is carcinogenic and somehow the mechanisms of power allowed it to slide into all sorts of things. And I want to give credit where it's due because, Matt, you also, this is around the same time, we're going through a soda phase. This is around the same time you pointed out brominated
vegetable oil.
Brominated vegetable oil. I should recall the specific chemical name. It's the stuff that makes orange soda taste orange and at the same time effervescent and carbonated. It's also bad. These are not crazy Nostradamus predictions. We're looking at this, and right now, folks, Matt is showing you a bit of the mechanisms behind how this clearly damaging chemical or substance came to be normalized. Because again, WHO, World Health Organization, and International Agency for Research on Cancer, they're not the same thing as the FDA.
That's right. Just want to point out really quick, just to have a little bit of a devil's advocate here. Maybe not. I don't think anyone's saying that drinking a Diet Coke is going to give you cancer instantly. We are talking about long-term exposure, like over the course of one's life. And those categories that we talked about, the 1, 2A, 2B, and 3, contain lots of different stuff. Some substances that sit alongside the newly classified 2B aspartame are aloe vera extract and pickled vegetables. I had no idea. I'm not saying this like I knew this, actually. I literally just found this out and was shocked to realize that pickled vegetables are also considered possibly carcinogenic. Why is no one talking about the pickled vegetable conspiracy? That's all I want to know.
Well, we should. I got to get this last thing out because this is what ties all the whole thing together with possible motive. A 2017 Vice article written by Kristen Lawless. We've cited this before. The title is Why Did the FDA Ever Approve Fake Sugar? I'm going to read verbatim from this. Thank you, Kristen, for writing this. Quote, the FDA first approved aspartame in 1974, but an FDA scientist at the time, Adrian Gross, discovered that there were serious shortcomings in all 15 long-term studies that Searle submitted for review. For example, some rats in the studies died, but were not autopsied after to discern the cause. In other cases, the aspartame was not mixed well enough into the food, and the rats were eating around it. There was also evidence of brain tumors in the rats in several studies. Gross's findings, along with pressure from other scientists, resulted in a public board of inquiry in early 1980 consisting of 3 independent scientists who reviewed the data and voted to withhold approval because, quote, they did not believe Searle's studies conclusively showed aspartame did not cause brain tumors.
That's not good.
Here's where the connection is. At the time, Donald Rumsfeld was the CEO of Searle. He was also on the transition team for Ronald Reagan, who was inaugurated in 1981.
Hey-o!
After the inauguration, Searle reapplied to the FDA after Rumsfeld is now in the mechanisms of the White House. Mm-hmm. Searle reapplied to the FDA for approval, at which point Reagan fired the sitting FDA commissioner and replaced him with this guy named Arthur Hayes Hull Jr., who reapproved aspartame for dry products.
Yeah, he did.
Check this out. This is when aspartame goes everywhere. For the dry goods, then it gets approved in liquids. And going back to the article, quote, soon after, Hull left the FDA and took a job with Burson Marsteller, the PR firm that worked for, guess who? Searle. Meanwhile, Searle, by the way, which Monsanto purchased in 1985 for $2.7 billion. Searle made billions off of it. And Rumsfeld became the Secretary of Defense under President George W. Bush. Isn't it interesting?
Well, at least he wasn't made the head of the FDA. That's all I'm saying. Irrelevant. But geez, man, these machinations within machinations are enough to do your head in. Whether or not aspartame is killing anybody outright, I mean, there were serious questions and remain serious questions. And we see this stuff get fast-tracked. And if this has taken us this long to really realize or have someone come out and say, yeah, actually, this has been the truth all along, what other stuff is out there that shouldn't be? We always talk about drugs that get fast-tracked, all of these things that get fast-tracked and pushed out before you really truly know what the impact on someone during a lifetime might be.
Yep.
And that's capitalism for you. I mean, it truly is. Like, it's everything is just in favor of, like, how can we make the buck as quick as possible? And I'm not trying to sound, you know, despairing or trying to sound completely jaded, but I swear to God, the more we talk about this stuff, the more I think there is no God.
Well, I mean, G.D. Searle at the time needed a win really badly. They literally brought Rumsfeld in to those positions to cut costs, and he ended up cutting a ton of money and expenditures, and they needed something to make a ton of money, and they did. They got it. Who knows? All right. Look up, quote, aspartame questions and answers. It's on the WHO website associated with the International Agency for Research on Cancer. It's got answers to the questions you may have after listening to this. Okay. And with that, we're jumping to a word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with more strange news.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators.
It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
And we're back with another piece of strange news. This one is mega strange, and it figures into a lot of the conversations we've been having of late about things like body modification, or more specifically, maybe gene modification, or what would you do if you could make yourself the best you that you could be? Like, you know, objectively speaking, not in terms of like your attitude, but like, you know, your ability to sustain long periods of activity, you know, or perhaps to keep your body temperature in a certain, you know, level in extreme conditions or whatever it might be. If there is some way to edit your genes to make you live forever. Well, we've had an example of this kind of thing that has always had a bad rap for a long time in professional sports. It's called doping, I guess, for like that's sort of the catch-all term for a bunch of different activities that are illegal. I believe they're not illegal like for life. They're just illegal in sports. Isn't that right, guys? Like, if you just want to do some blood doping, you know, on your own time, and you're not in the Olympics,
it depends on the nature of the substance used, the country in which it's used, the opinion of the ruling body of whatever professional sport may enter in conversation. But in general, as I've always said, legislation lags behind technological innovation. So there are literally substances out there that may alter natural performance, and there are no laws to regulate those outside of specific policies instituted by sporting bodies.
And if I'm not mistaken, there are even, to that point, Ben, there are some drugs that are so new, they can't even be tested for yet, or they actually mimic natural chemicals in the body. And that was something I was reading and looking into this research. I don't have specific names here, but that's a little outside of the topic, though I think this might be a good follow-up longer form episode 2, what we've been talking about with genetic editing and what that means, who gets to do it, you know, what does it mean for the future if there is a class of hyper people, and I don't mean just like hopped up on, you know, caffeine, I just mean they're like better somehow than others, and who gets to afford that, and what does that divide mean in society? We're talking about specifically today cheating in sports. If you take, you know, steroids, for example, which is a huge issue. So many major athletes, you know, Lance Armstrong, people that were unimpeachably beloved, you know, it would seem, found out to have been taking steroids, you know, which are performance enhancing drugs. There's lots of different ones. Blood doping is one that's always eluded me a little bit. I believe it has to do with oxygenating the blood. Like, or it's like you literally get like sort of an on demand sort of transfusion where you kind of like somehow enhance the blood, not necessarily with drugs. I believe it has to do with oxygenating. Do you guys know what the difference between what blood doping is?
Yeah. Blood doping is where you essentially re-add a person's own blood to their bloodstream.
Yes.
And it happens about somewhere around like a month, a little less than a month before a race. So you're you're hyping yourself up, but you're not using other substances. Mm-hmm. You're using the products of your own body at this point.
I was sort of right about the end goal. The end goal is to allow the blood to transport more oxygen to the muscles, which can up one's stamina and potentially increase one's performance. And you were absolutely right, Ben, about the way that that is done. But we know this is things that happen. We know there are tests. We know that, for example, the Olympic Committee, they take this stuff very seriously. And drug testing has gotten more and more, specific and more rigorous. And, you know, it's just not something that is tolerated. But what if, you might be asking, there were a whole new Olympics where all bets were off regarding these enhancements?
Yes.
What if?
Yes. This is a question I asked years back. We were all hanging out on a different show. It was on, what's that one?
Harmontown.
Dan. Harmontown. We were hanging out in Harmontown. The Special Olympics. Noel, is it happening? Is there a real anything goes Olympics on the way?
Well, in theory, there is. And I'll tell you who else predicted this, Ben. Way back in, I believe, the 80s, I believe Kevin Nealon was the host of sort of the fake news show on SNL. And there is a segment on that about the drug Olympics, essentially an Olympics where any drug you could imagine is fair game. So to answer your question, Ben, is this happening? In theory, there is a fellow by the name of Aaron D'Souza, a.k.a. Mr. A, who you may have mainly heard associated with the collapse of Gawker Media by billionaire Peter Thiel, who essentially, you know, along with Mr. A or Aaron D'Souza, toppled this news organization through a series of lawsuits. I think the real kicker was the one involving invasion of privacy and Hulk Hogan and a sex tape and all of that. So this guy, serious legal powerhouse, is an Australian citizen, and the whole legal strategy behind the Gawker annihilation was his idea, by all accounts. Now, he is coming forward with this idea to start what he is referring to as the Enhanced Olympics. Enhanced Games. In an Australian Associated Press article, they refer to it as an audacious plan for sporting event without drug testing. And this guy D'Souza wants to stage the first one of these next year. And he's thinking about it in a really interesting way. He is, by a lot of the detractors of this say, well, this isn't sports. This is spectacle. And I would agree. But also, what is sports if not in its own right, its own kind of spectacle? And at what point do the two things, you know, combine? I mean, the purists who are sporting fans would argue that it's about, you know, pushing the boundaries of the human form, you know, pushing the boundaries of human ingenuity and perseverance and physicality or whatever. But we also know throughout history, people have been caught for using these kinds of performance-enhancing drugs. I saw a really fascinating list of, I believe, the 100-meter dash in the Olympics. And the fastest time was by Usain Bolt in Berlin, the Berlin Olympics. So the year is escaping me at this exact moment. But almost every other entry that were slightly slower than Usain by like a few milliseconds had either been accused of or actually convicted, or whatever the term might be, you know, caught for some form of performance enhancement. The interesting part of this whole conversation is that the number one guy, clean, completely clean. So the question then becomes, if everyone is able to use performance enhancing drugs, is it just kind of changing the playing field and releveling it and putting everyone on an even playing field? And to D'Souza's point, he's like, well, there's an interesting aspect of that too, because somebody could enter the competition and say, I'm coming in clean and I'm better than all of you mofos that are, you know, blood doping and you know, juicing or whatever. And therefore it becomes this like almost man versus machine kind of spectacle, you know, like to the point of some of the folks that are criticizing this. I don't know. He basically says it's good television is what D'Souza says. But also he has a real philosophy behind this. And some of it is very interesting. There is a section on his website, or the website for this, I guess, initiative, called enhance.org. And it is a section called inclusive language. Language matters. I'm going to read straight from it. The use of enhanced and doping can vary between different groups and generations. For some people, especially those entrenched in an antiquated way of thinking, words like enhanced and doping have negative connotations because of their historical use as discriminatory terms. These terms have been reclaimed in recent years and are becoming increasingly used, particularly by younger athletes, as an empowering way of describing oneself. There's then a section, I'm going to read this and then we'll move on, but on the colonialist origins of doping. Steeped in racial prejudice, doping and its variations are harmful words wielded by sports federations to keep athletes from embracing science. The term originates from the colonialist Dutch forces' description of the performance enhancements used by the defending West African tribes. The word was soon used to describe the medical enhancements given to horses before being weaponized against the black population in the 1980s war on drugs. So I guess the term doping was really used more as like this enhancement kind of thing from the Dutch origins before it was referring to dope fiends and dope addicts.
No, who's that author again? Who's that journalist?
Yeah, well, this is from the website of enhance.org is where I'm reading this.
Okay.
So it's not cited. That's my point. And I don't know exactly. I can't cross-reference all of this stuff specifically. My point, I think, is that some of this is a little murky. But let's get through this and then we can talk about it. Doping is a colonialist slur that reeks of symbolic and historic violence against both the black and enhanced populations and needs to be removed from our vocabulary. Wow.
Well, but they sell shirts and stuff that say enhanced on them, I guess, to reclaim it. That's the idea, and make a profit.
Yeah, but I mean, the idea of reclaiming a slur is a little, that's, you know, that to me belongs to words like in the LGBTQ community, like, you know, the Q word and like the N word, you know, and the black community. Those are words that those communities are allowed to use to describe themselves, and they can do so with however they see fit, but it is not for others to use. Then it becomes a term of abuse. That to me is what reclaiming means. This to me is a little frivolous when you try to lump this argument in with those arguments, but maybe not. And I'm not familiar. Maybe Ben and Matt, maybe you're more familiar with this colonialist origin of the term doping, but I am not. To me, it seems a little propagandistic, the way this is sort of being spelled out here.
Yeah, it's tough because this movement, as you said, is latching on to something that is actually happening where there is reclaiming, right? And empowerment occurring. It's strange, in my opinion, to attach all of those things to the choice to take, you know, certain substances or not, and spinning it as science, you know, enhancement through science, which it is in some way, but at the same time, it's going against the rules of a lot of, you know, these large sporting organizations. They agreed upon rules. So it's, I don't know. Maybe I'm completely wrong, but it feels
I agree with you.
I don't know. It just feels weird to me.
I can posit an answer for you, Matt, to Noel's earlier question about the etymology of the phrase doping. Noel, you're on the right track when you mention the idea of the Dutch, because during Dutch colonialism, there was a specific tribe that had a beverage consumed in religious ceremonies as a stimulant. This was called by the colonists, the colonizers, this was called DOP, D-O-P. And a lot of times, you know, every time you get to the origin stories of etymology and the origin stories of specific words, you arrive at anecdotes, you arrive at murky guesses. Right. And so the origin of the word doping is still under intense discussion. It sounds as though the sources you are quoting are objecting to the use of the terminology more so than the physical activity itself. However, for everybody who wants to be fun at parties playing along at home, doping does appear to have entered at some point the English vernacular, descended from colonial observations of religious practices of earlier communities.
Yeah. And then the question becomes like, I mean, sure, that this is someone that these colonialist forces are looking at as a problem, someone they are seeing as an other who they want to quash. So therefore, the term inherently has a negative connotation. And they probably are using this as some sort of like way of maligning these religious practices or saying that they're like heathens or something like that. So perhaps the origins of the word, yeah, problematic, it would seem. This is news to me, and this is very, very interesting, and I would love to look more into this. But no, to your point, Ben, it would appear not only are they more concerned with the use of the word itself than the activity, they are very pro the activity. They are saying that these athletes are grown-ups, they should be able to put whatever they want into their body, my choice, and all of that. And their main issue with this enhanced movement is that the heads of the these sporting organizations, for example, specifically they're referring to the Olympic National Committee, are very wealthy, receive all kinds of payouts and bonuses and what have you, but that to be even a gold medal winning Olympic athlete often comes not only at a price to your life, because you just have to be so focused and borderline obsessed, if not just fully obsessed, that a lot of these folks end up not wealthy at all. Even despite, you know, working their entire lives to reach this point and get these accolades, you know, there's a lot of stories on the site of like folks who have competed in Olympic competitions and have ended up like living out of their cars and stuff like that. Again, there's definitely a bit of a perspective here, no question about it. But the idea is that to level the playing field and wipe away the rules that they would argue this elite group have made, is nothing but a good thing. You are the enhanced movement. Together we can fix sports and defeat the corrupt International Olympic Committee is sort of the catchphrase, you know, at the very bottom of this website that's on every single page. So I don't know. It's fascinating. It truly is. You know, I just stop exploitation is a section on it. This says here, the president of the International Olympic Committee dines with billionaires and dictators, jets around the world and lives in a luxurious 6-star hotel while American Olympians are not even given a salary. There's truth to a lot of this. What it has to do with performance enhancing drugs, I don't quite see the connection, but maybe I'm missing something.
I mean, I don't know. I don't want to be cynical. It feels like a way to start a huge event that you could have.
That's what it is.
You know, every year, every couple of years. And theoretically, like the Olympic Committee, make tons and tons of money on.
It seems like someone that has an axe to grind against the Olympic Committee, too. Yeah. And they're trying to come out and, you know, make them less relevant. But then there was an article that I read, I believe it was in The Telegraph, that pointed out if everyone's taking the same performance enhancing drugs, it's not cheating anymore. And so it sort of misses the point, you know, like if people are doping now I'm starting to feel weird about using the term. If people are taking these performance enhancing drugs or using these performance enhancing treatments, and they're doing it secretly in the hopes of not being caught, then that's cheating because that's against the rules. But I still come back to this, this idea of Usain Bolt getting that best time in the 100 meter and testing completely clean, and almost every other entrant in the top 10 of that event throughout history has had some accusations of performance enhancement levied against them, if not outright proven. So that just goes to show that like you don't have to do this to actually be the best. And I think the idea of someone openly entering this event and saying, no, I am coming in on my own steam and I'm not taking any of this, like, is that person given special considerations? Are there handicaps? Like, you know, like there is in golf. Like, I just, it's fascinating. And it really is, Ben. You nailed it in that Harmontown chat. It does start to feel a little bit more like a weird kind of, you know, free-for-all future event that is a little icky, maybe. I don't know. Not a huge fan of the Olympics either. You know, people stake their lives on that stuff and then get injured horribly and then can't do anything else because that's all they spent their whole lives, you know, figuring out how to be the best person that can jump the highest or the farthest or run the fastest. And then when that dream dies and doesn't really provide for you or your family for the rest of your life, what are you left with? Something to think about. I don't know. You guys have anything to add? I think probably spent enough time on this one.
Part man, part robot, all Russian. I think that's what was stated. Shout out to Spencer Crittenden, who was the one who said, we got to remove that, Ben. And you called it the genetically altered Olympics, by the way.
Well, you got to cover bases. yeah, we're going along. It's a part man, part truck.
Yeah, that's what it was. All Russian.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
All right, we'll take a quick break, have a word from our sponsor, hopefully not the International Olympic Committee, and then we'll be back with more strange news.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, the story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Check out our episode, by the way, or our earlier conversations about the IOC, not to be confused with the AOC, very different things. Have you guys ever heard about solar radiation modification?
Yes.
No, but you know I like a good rhyme, so I'm all in.
I'm always kind of freestyling. Matt, you said you heard of it. Do you mean things like sunscreen?
Yeah, definitely. That's what I'm talking about. Stuff that'll protect an individual's skin from solar radiation. No.
Until you check out our episode on sunscreen. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh God.
We're here for you, folks. So this evening, real quick, wanted to give you some strange news, fellow conspiracy realists, something that will mean a great deal to entities like me and you and everybody else who thinks the sun is getting a little big for its britches these days on planet Earth. Before I say anything about this story, I should outline the following axioms. One, The sun is the only reason life on Earth exists. This brilliant, crazy star feeds the vast majority of ecosystems on this planet. There are a couple of exceptions, like deep sea vents, right? But those ecosystems, if you think about it, also depend on the sun. Maybe not for the energy it provides as it burns, so much as for the gravitational attraction it exerts on the planet, right? A living Earth produces ecosystems, and the sun is the reason that Earth is around. But if we are being honest, the sun's a real pain in the ass, and I wanted to bring this story to us, to all of us listening along tonight, because a long, long time ago, Matt, you and I were talking about how influential the Matrix trilogy was. I think we were talking about this before the third film dropped. And there's this moment in the lore, in the universe of the Matrix, where the powers that be are at war with what they call AI or thinking machines, however you prefer it. And as a result, they know that these thinking machines are solar powered. They decide to block out the sun. Matt, what happens?
Oh, it's just everything's, it works, you know?
No, you remember this, right? Yeah, famous buddy comedy, The Matrix.
Yeah, loved it. Loved it. Yeah. There was a talking raccoon at some point, I believe, as well, right? Mm.
Yeah, you know what? Let's see what Matrix 4 brings us. I thought of everyone who, everyone tuning in tonight who is also not a daywalker, when I read something quite interesting from the United States Presidential Administration. They have quite recently, as of, let's see, we're recording on a Wednesday, it's July 5th, happy birthday to my old man. We are recording just days after the U.S. released a report about how they're trying to get a handle on global warming. And kid you not, one of the ideas is something called solar radiation modification. Why don't we just block out the fucking sun? I heard a weird echo on my end when I said that. Do you guys hear any reverb?
I think it was the sun being irritated and plotting against you.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of people do. But the White House has released this statement, and it comes from the Biden administration. And they're studying, with good faith, the idea that altering sunlight might help cool the planet at a faster pace than would happen with the current attempts to mitigate global warming. So the current attempts include things like reducing fossil fuel emissions, right? That's one of the big ones. Reducing the use of machinery that that can propagate fossil fuel emissions. This idea is something totally different. It's saying, let's remove some portion of the sun's energy that reaches Earth's atmosphere. I don't know how you would do it. And first, you know, we have to ask, are they saying build a gigantic umbrella between the Earth and the sun? I don't think it's that. They're trying to get the boffins of the world to figure out a way to filter certain radiation coming from the closest star. I don't know. I mean, does this sound crazy?
Yeah, it sounds pretty crazy to me. I'm looking at the research plan now, Ben, the White House put out, just trying to wrap my head around it. Like, what are they actually talking about?
Yeah, you'll want to go to page 24, section B, development of scenarios for solar radiation modification.
I mean, are we talking some kind of filter? Was there more than one way of doing this? Like, one thing to say, block out the sun, and people immediately picture apocalyptic, you know, being plunged into permanent darkness or whatever like that. But you would think, I mean, isn't technically that what the ozone layer is there to do? And the fact that there's a hole in the thing, sort of not doing its job so well anymore. So why not focus more on fixing the hole in the ozone layer, or having some sort of deflector or filter thing that would have to be obviously massively huge. And I'm no space scientist here, but it seems like it would be a difficult thing logistically to accomplish. I'm sorry if I missed it, Ben. Are there alternative ways that are being proposed? Has someone come out and said, we've got the solution, we've got the fix?
You've nailed some of the pertinent issues there, Noel, one of which is the idea of a filter. With uncharacteristic happiness, fellow conspiracy realists, we can report the ozone hole over the South Pole has actually shrunk considerably in recent times. It's good news for the rest of the world. In terms of a filter, yes. How could you deploy a filter? One idea is to multiply the amount of specific aerosol dispersants in the stratosphere. The idea being kind of like cloud seeding facing out. If we can create the right mix of substances and put them at the right level of the atmosphere, then the idea is that these substances may be able to somehow bounce back the bad stuff from the sun while allowing the good stuff in to create essentially another filter on the atmosphere. Of course, this sounds a little expensive, you might say, and this is untrod ground. This is untrod air, rather. No one knows what will happen when you do this sort of stuff. In science fiction, if it's good, is only fiction for a minute. We remember the lessons of the Matrix. This idea of modifying the amount of solar radiation that reaches Earth, reaches past some part of the atmosphere onto the ground and onto the life forms living there, it feels dangerous. It feels like we're messing with something we can't understand. But again, at the top of this strange news segment, we already talked a little bit about how the heat is rising. You know what I mean? Like, these are the hottest days in recorded history. In desperation, people find innovation. And sometimes in desperation, people go to extremes. I don't know. Like, what could this work? What will we do?
Sorry, I remember this. I don't know, Ben. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know what we would do. We made an episode in 2020 about stratospheric aerosol injections.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what this plan was back in 2020, and they were talking about it. It's nuts to me that we're now in 2023 and the White House is saying, yeah, guys, we need a plan. Like, how are we going to do this? When can we do it? Let's go. That's crazy.
That's just such a roll the dice moment, right? You know, one of the world's most dangerous governments is saying, I don't know, you know, we sprayed some stuff up there. Why not spray more stuff up there? Roll the dice. Home of Las Vegas, baby. So what happens? They're very cautious about this. The big strange news is that the official executive branch of the U.S. is releasing this in any sort of serious form. We can see the caveats aplenty from far away. Noel, Matt, we're raising already very salient points. You know, climate change is going to lead to very bad things that we have cited previously. However, what would you do if you found an aerosol that could, say, reduce the amount of harmful heat getting through to the world without hurting vulnerable life forms and crops and so on? This wouldn't fix air pollution from fossil fuels. It wouldn't fix ocean acidification. It would just turn the lights down a little bit, right? With unknown consequences. I don't think it's going to happen.
It's so nuts. I'm going to give you, this is not an analogy. This is just a comparison that's happening in my head when I'm thinking about this.
Yeah.
It's like humanity's got a house, right? And attached to that house is a garage. And we invented this thing called a car. And we parked it in the garage and we turned on the engine. And the smoke is just, you know, kind of filling up the house. And we're like, man, that's weird. It's getting warm in here. It's kind of hard to breathe. That's kind of strange. I really like the car, though. So I guess let's just put a filter on the front of the door. We can't close the garage door because there's no door there. Let's just put a filter system, or maybe let's spray some more stuff in the air to make it, you know, less bad. Mm-hmm. We like the car too much. It's just too good.
That's the question, right? We like our, like, that's the thing. I love that you point that out. I think that's brilliant because it's kind of like the United States saying, well, we're not going to change ourselves. We should change the galaxy. You know what I mean? Is it us who's wrong? No, it's the solar system. So, like, let's focus on that. Also, you might be tickled to find, folks, that the European Parliament and the European Council, the EU, basically said that they're down to clown. They said we can discuss internationally how human beings can limit heating from the sun. You can write to the White House press office, and you can, like me, not get a direct response on this, because I imagine they're sort of busy. I don't know. You know, there's also the valid criticism where someone would say, hey, wealth inequality is spiking. People are in desperate times on the ground. What is your weird sci-fi plan about blocking the sun do to help them in the next 2 weeks? You know, I think that's always a valid question. It reminds me a little bit of the excellent Mr. Show sketch where they decide to blow up the moon because,
just like, as a flex,
science is there.
Yeah, exactly.
How weird is it that this is happening as AI seems to be emerging, like actual AI seems to be emerging over the next 20 years or whatever, while the humans are attempting to maybe block out the sun a little bit? That's a little weird.
I thought you would like it.
Come on.
I thought you liked The Matrix. That was for you.
It's not supposed to be real life. It's supposed to be fantasy.
Well, we're going to call the Wachowskis and ask them about this. Also, while this is accelerating, I want to give a couple of statements from an Energy Department veteran. Suchi Talati was an official of the Energy Department, DOE, under the Biden administration, and is now the executive director of something called, you'll love this, guys, the Alliance for Just Deliberation on Solar Geoengineering.
I mean, the writers go on strike, and this is what we get?
It makes me want to watch the Mr. Show sketch again, that's for sure. It's a brilliant piece of writing. And it seems like it might be a while before we get any new brilliant pieces of writing. Solidarity with the writers, by the way.
Agreed. And solidarity with people who are pushing beyond the bounds of conventional human physique in these unhinged Olympics on the way. Solidarity with everyone who has wanted a Diet Coke and has thought about the bigger picture. And also, you know what? Solidarity with the boffins. With solidarity with the nerds, everybody who is working on honest, rigorous research that is often used to make a big headline. I'd like to end with the headline of the week. Speaking of that, found this online, quote, OpenAI sued for stealing everything anyone's ever written on the internet. with that headline of the week, we're going to call it an evening on Strange News. I hope this finds you well. Hope you can find us. We try to be easy to communicate with via any number of platforms.
It's true. Find us on the internet. We exist at the handle Conspiracy Stuff on YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
Hey, do you like calling and leaving voicemails? Of course you do. Call 1-833-STDWYTK. You've got 3 minutes. Give yourself a cool nickname and let us know if we can use your name and message on the air. It's that easy. If you don't want to do that, why not instead send us an email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.